Peter Lynham.
And how are you today?
Good. Good as. Monday, feeling pretty Monday, but it actually feels okay this time.
Yes. You haven't had to dodge that many windstorms or showers?
I think it is windy on a scooter, but nothing like old mate on the truck over the bridge sort of situation.
Not quite one-off 100-year events, is it, I think.
Now, Peter, why should Hindu nationalism concern me?
Well, my attention was drawn to this by a podcast from the ABC, which was talking about the visit of Premier Modi to Australia a couple of years ago, and that he was able to draw this vast crowd of Indians to hear him in a crowd larger than the average pop star would get.
Wow.
And the significant thing that was raised by this was the extraordinary fascination worldwide that many Indians feel towards the revival of the BJP party's approach to politics, which is in essence a Hindu nationalist approach. And the significance of this in COVID-19 is that almost all indentured labour, so that's the people who are of the lowest class, or really it's not in the caste system at all, the untouchables as they used to be called, they were all sent back to their villages. And so they travelled across India. The trains, the whole railway system was closed down, so they had to walk home.
Whoa.
And in the process, there were thousands of people, according to some reckonings, who were killed on the way because, as the untouchables, and very often the untouchables have converted to Islam or to Christianity because they've got no status in Hinduism, killed rather than offered hospitality as they struggled to find their way to their home villages. It's a hidden story, but it's a pretty significant one.
When are you talking about? What time period? Recently?
Yeah, I'm talking about over the last 6 months.
Oh, during COVID.
Oh, sheesh.
Yes.
Whenever I see the word nationalist, I get a little bit weirded out by it. Is that like a...
Yeah. Well, of course, we're watching the rise of nationalism of one form or another in almost every country in the world. In India, it's always been a bit complex because of the partition back in 1947 when India was created, Pakistan was separated out from it. And so Pakistan was imagined as an Islamic country. And so most Muslims tried to get home, whereas India very definitely, under the vision of Nehru and of Gandhi, was to be a secular country that was not tied into a particular religion. But in fact, what happened was that, especially in North India, where Hindu forces are very, very strong, there was an enormous slaughter of people, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people. They've never been able to reckon how many were killed as they attempted to get to Pakistan or to what was then called East Pakistan, now Bangladesh, of course.
Right.
And so that was the first example of Hindu nationalism, and the horror about that really entrenched Nehru in the notion that India must never be seen as a religious state. And the Constitution's very, very clear on this. But since the rise of the BJP, and of course going back a long way in tradition, there's been a growing tendency to feel that the essence of India lies in its Indian-based religions. You understand that Hindu is a bit of a mythological term anyway. There is no single Hinduism in the way that there is a single, there is a single Islam, but there certainly is a coherent Islam. Hinduism simply clumps together the worship of an enormous number of gods and goddesses.
It's in the thousands, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Well, millions, they say.
Right, wow.
I've heard it said there are more gods than there are Indians.
Are they written down somewhere, or are people just kind of making these up?
Well, each has their own local shrine. So each shrine is to a god or goddess. So
would that goddess or god be directly related to whatever problems the people have?
Yes, indeed. So these are gods of that you pray for particular needs.
Yes, okay.
Or add their local deities, mythologies surround them.
That's fascinating, eh? Who makes up the god? That's fucking weird.
So if you go to the various temples, and remember that it's a strange thing that the Jains and the Sikhs didn't get included in Hinduism, because in some ways they are also Indian religions, and except there was always tension between the Sikhs in their very particular part of India, and the Jains too tend to be regionally distributed. But you see, this meant that the two big minority religions, Christians and Muslims, and Muslims is much stronger than Christians, I think, overall. But we're talking of, say, 2% of Indians would be Christian. And, you know, even after the formation of Pakistan, probably 5 to 8% of Indians are Muslims. So these are not inconsiderable minorities. And for many, many generations, the Mughals, the Islamic great sultans, if you like, ruled over the peasant Hindus. So there's a little bit of a revenge factor going on in this as well as an anti-British factor.
Yeah, I was just thinking that as well.
Yeah, so all of these sit as a kind of an entrenched part of the background. But then the other part that's definitely been significant in Indian history has been the caste system. So the various castes that exist in India do not include the ones, the so-called untouchables. So these are the people who can't be given a caste. Anything that they do defiles the life for other Indians. So you need to have nothing to do with these people. And so it's a very grim life being in the caste system. And in fact, most of people who are of the untouchables end up by being in indentured labor. They're effectively slave laborers. The Indians would emphatically deny this, but I've seen on my visit to India the areas where they tend to work in incredibly appalling hours and to live together and to be moved great distances to where there's a need for justless laborers.
I've had the pleasure of going to India as well. And
so you've seen the same?
It is a rich, rich place in culture, but it's hectic as hell as well. Like, I recommend if you do go to India, head for the hills. It's 10 degrees cooler and there's hash up there.
Maybe so, but the cities are so extraordinarily vital.
Oh, yeah, it's
full of life and chaos.
It's overwhelming. It's overwhelming.
Yeah,
and with the heat as well. But what's interesting is in the hills, they actually have religions centered around cannabis. You know, it's like it's just grows wildly up there.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, full on.
Now, Peter, will any light get shone on all of these people which have perished or been killed throughout the COVID pandemic?
There are some campaigns being waged by a number of international bodies that are very, very concerned because, I mean, there's major humanitarian issues involved in this, in the destruction, their loss of their possessions, the deaths, and to some extent also the destruction of mosques and churches has also gone on at the same time. And so a number of bodies have appealed for assistance. But the simple fact is that, you know, in the context of India and the scale of India, it's, and this is particularly happening in North India, so where basically it's a peasant population out of the towns, whereas in the south it's more industrialized and more urbanized, and so things tend to happen more publicly. But a lot of this has happened in the countryside. I don't think we will ever know just how extensive the problems have been. And that's why, I mean, I have to treat the estimates with a bit of caution. But it's what's disturbing is the BJP and Modi's willingness to cheerfully defend that India's for the Hindus, and really these people have no place, so normal civil rights shouldn't operate for them.
Terribly sad.
And sad because India was potentially one of the very few examples of a secularly conceived democracy. And we're watching it falling apart before our eyes.
All right, Peter, very interesting. We will check in with you next week.
Excellent.
Good, mate.